Welcome to Bodcast, the Business of Dentistry podcast, brought to you by Practice Plan. Bodcast delivers the best business advice, real-life stories, and practical hints and tips to make your practice a more profitable and sustainable business. And now, here's your host.
Hello and welcome to this latest podcast from Practice Plan. My name's Les Jones. I'm the creative director at Practice Plan, and I'm here with a good friend of mine and someone who's shared the stage with me on the Practice Plan workshop tour over the last few months, Mr. Simon Tucker.
Good afternoon, Les. Nice to see you.
Good afternoon, Simon. Simon is the creator and owner of Profitable Conversation and is here today to talk to us about effective selling within a dental practice. Just before we get into that, Simon, just give us a little bit of background about you, your experience within the dental profession.
It goes back a long way. I'm a salesman, yes. And I've been selling to dentists for 35 years. I was very fortunate in one of the jobs I had to have some really, really good sales training, which I still carry with me today. And what I've managed to do over the years is change the terminology of those skills to suit the dental team, because the one word that dental teams don't like is selling. And I actually say, well, look, we're not selling, we're just having a conversation with the patient, hence the name of my business, Profitable Conversation, because in my view, selling is actually a conversation about the buyer, not the person offering the product or service. So once we overcome the selling fear and talk about having conversations with patients about them, usually the doors start to open and people start to work with me. So that's why where the name of the business came from. So I'm taking my experience in terms of sales and putting it into the dental environment, right in the practice, dentist, patient, nurse, patient, patient coordinator, patient, however they want to work it. So
if we were to ask, I would think the vast majority of dental practices, would they like to increase their treatment uptake? I'm sure we get an overwhelming yes to that question.
Absolutely.
So what do you think are the kind of the areas of a dental practice business that are kind of holding them back from achieving that at the moment?
Two things. Number one, nobody in the practice is actually asking enough questions of the patient. And they all look at me like I'm from Mars when I say that, because they say, well, we talk to our patients all the time. And I said, you do, exactly. You talk with them, but actually more understanding the patient. And it's not that they don't care. All dental practices really want to do a good job for their patients and give them the very best treatment. But actually, certainly in the current, in today's business world, patients also want more choice and want to be involved in that choice. And actually, it's been evidenced over many years that patients in healthcare in general that are involved more in their treatment planning actually, one, have it done, two, stick to the treatment plan, and once they've had the treatment, then take better care of themselves. And obviously, GDC regulations say patient must be involved in the choice. CQC says the same thing. So what I'm trying to help practices with actually also then helps them comply with the GDC guidelines and also the CQC guidelines in terms of how you must involve patients in their treatment choices. And just by doing that, patients spend more money, accept more treatment, and are happier about their relationship with their practice.
So what tools could dental practices use to stimulate them asking not only more questions but the right kind of questions of their patients? I know on the Practice Plan workshop tour, which we did together recently, you talked a lot about using dental health assessment questionnaires and stuff like that.
Myself and one of my long-term colleagues, Richard Collard, created a document a few years ago called a personal dental assessment. Basically, it's a simple questionnaire that the patient fills out, tick box, yes or no, to certain questions. And then we give them two scales at the bottom of the page. It says, on a scale of 1 to 10, how do you feel about your dental health? Rate yourself out of 10. And on a scale of 1 to 10, how do you feel about the way your teeth look? And all that is a prompt to prompt the questions from the clinician or the member of the team to ask personally about you. So let's say, Les, you're my patient, you filled out the questionnaire, I've now got a starting point to say, Les, let's just have a look at this. You've rated yourself a 9 out of 10. What's the reason you haven't put a 10? And immediately, I've shown you that I'm interested in you, you have to answer the question, And you might say, well, I didn't want to put 10 because it might look a bit arrogant. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. But I can also then say, how important is it for you to maintain that 9 or 10? Mm-hmm. Well, it's very important. Now I know that you care about your dental health. Yes. And that's just, all this does is allow you to prompt personalised questions to every patient. Mm-hmm. And I recommend that that's done with every new patient mm-hmm. and every existing patient once a year, because things change. Mm-hmm. You know, it might be that I'm looking at, you know, you're my patient, I'm looking down in your mouth and thinking, well, Lesens hasn't mentioned it, so it must be mm-hmm. okay. And you're looking up going, well, Simon hasn't mentioned it, so it must be okay. Mm-hmm. We're not actually having the conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
So the piece of paper is, you filled it in. And of course, if you filled in a document, you expect it to get used.
Yes.
And you give it to me, and I've now got a perfect prompt all about you, and it personalises it.
So. And I suppose a lot of it is about kind of just getting below the skin a little bit
yes.
in terms of what is really of value
yes.
to the patient. And
yes.
I know you talk a lot about that one particular word, value.
I do, because we all say we offer value. In business, we offer value. We are an added value business, or we provide great value. But actually, in my view, and I get teams to think about this, what is the definition of value?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a one-word definition, in my view, of value, and it's personal.
Mm.
So you might like great works of art and spend lots of your salary on it.
Mm.
I might disagree and think you're crazy. But that's two personal opinions.
Yes.
Neither of us are right or wrong. And so if we're talking about dentistry, saying to a patient you're going to lose a tooth, they might not care.
Mm-hmm.
But if you then say to the patient, well, if you lose that tooth, you're not going to be able to chew steak properly. And I know how much you love steak, Les.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, suddenly I'm getting you to think differently because I know you as a person.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm only going to get to know you if I ask the right questions.
Yeah.
So value is personal.
Mm-hmm.
And the world's best salesperson is the buyer. So what we want is the questions to open up the patient to say what they value
mm-hmm.
and how much they value it.
Mm-hmm.
So go back to that questionnaire. If you said you think your dental health is a 10,
mm-hmm.
my obvious question is, how important is it, Les, to you to keep that 10? And if you say really important, I know you value your dental health.
And of course, if I answered it, it's a 4 out of 10, then you know there's a big gap between where I am and where
yeah.
perhaps I could be.
Well, if you say you're a 4 out of 10, my next question is, so what's concerning you that makes it a 4?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've got a bit of bleeding here, or I don't like mm-hmm. this, or I've got some pain there. So I'm just going to get you to talk about what your mm-hmm. concerns are.
Mm-hmm.
But if I then say to you, how important is it, Les, to take yourself from a 4 to a 10,
mm-hmm.
and you say, well, I'm not really bothered, then I know you don't value my services.
Mm-hmm.
If you say, yes, really important, we're on the same page and we can both talk about mutual, you know, agreement about where you're going to go next with your treatment. Mm-hmm. So value is personal. You just need to find out what your patient values. So.
Yeah. And one of the big things, I suppose, with effective selling, effective communication, is ultimately people buy people, don't
yes.
they? They don't buy products, they don't buy services,
no.
they buy the person.
Yes.
And a lot of that is built on rapport
yep.
and trust.
Yes.
And so how would you advise dentists to kind of build that level of trust within their patients so that they feel much more confident and relaxed in saying yes to taking up their treatment?
Again, more conversation about them as people, less clinical
mm-hmm.
conversation. Unless the patient wants to know all the detail.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, let's look at dentistry in its purest form is a very intimate service.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an awful lot of trust immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Patients wouldn't come in through the front door if they didn't trust you as a clinician.
Mm-hmm.
So there is trust. Because they're also going to have to sit in your chair and let you put your fingers in their mouth. That's a very personal
mm-hmm.
violation of that person's mm-hmm. personal space.
Mm-hmm.
So there's immediate trust. But then when it comes to talking about treatment, we bring in money.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as there's money in the interaction, the trust just, oh, hang on a minute. Is the person in it for the money
mm-hmm.
or is the person in the money for the care? Now, you're a clinician, so I trust you implicitly from a
mm-hmm.
clinical point of view. If I take my car to the garage and they say it needs work, I personally am always a little suspicious because I'm not a mechanic. I don't know.
But you've got an equation for that, haven't you?
Yes.
I've listened to you talk on many times about the trust equation.
Yes.
Is that something that's easy to kind of explain in a minute or so?
I think so. Well, first it comes from a book called
yeah.
The Trusted Advisor by three gentlemen called Maester, Galford and Green. So you
mm-hmm.
can look it up, you can read it.
Yeah.
So it's not my equation, it's from their book,
mm-hmm.
the Trusted Advisor. But basically what they're saying is trust is equal to the way that you interact with those patients. Yeah. So trust is equal to credibility. So you're immediately credible because you're a qualified clinician and a qualified practice. So that's why they come in the front door trusting you. You're credible. Yeah, yeah. The next thing is that trust is built by working and dealing with people who are dependable.
Right.
So if you as a clinician say to me, Simon, don't worry, I'm going to refer you to my colleague who's a brilliant oral surgeon, and you do, and that person is a brilliant oral surgeon, I trust you. Or simply you say, Simon, one of my team's going to call you tomorrow to see how you are after this treatment. Mm-hmm. And your team member does, you're dependable as a practice, so your trust goes up.
So keeping to your word.
Keeping to your word, yes. And demonstrating you're dependable. Mm-hmm. But the real element of that equation is the R bit of it, which is relationship. Mm-hmm. And that's the bit the dental team has most control over. Because relationships take time, they take conversation, they take openness. And the longer you spend with your patients as a team, the stronger that relationship grows.
Yes.
So if you build a great relationship, you're dependable, you're going to build trust. But what the equation also shows, there was a Steve Chalk added a bit to that equation, which was self-interest. And if there's too much, if the other person thinks you're only into the reaction for what you get out of it, the trust diminishes somewhat. And in my view, what causes self-interest in business, more than anything else, is money.
Right.
Again, as soon as there's cash involved, we become a little more suspicious about, is this for the good of my health, or is this for the good of his wallet?
Right.
Now, that's not strong in dentistry, but it is an issue now that people are paying more and more for their treatment. So the relationship, if it's really strong, they'll trust you implicitly. And if you say, well, I would do this treatment on my wife, my daughter, my son, my best friend, then they'll have it too. So
So let me just get this right then. So it's credibility plus dependability plus relationships divided by self-interest.
Spot on.
And that's the thing to avoid.
Yes.
That you're always, always acting in the interest of the patient.
Yes.
And therefore, it's not really selling. It's just informing the patient of what options they have.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And asking the patient, in dentistry, there's always at least two options. Mm-hmm. One is do nothing. Mm-hmm. However, you might be in pain in a few weeks, but we could do nothing. So you give the patient that choice. Second option is the treatment, but normally there's at least two other options as well. And if you give people choice, normally their first question will be, well, what would you have if it was your son, daughter, wife? And you say, well, I'd have this because your credibility means they go straight for the one you've suggested. And then it's about, can I afford it or not? Mm.
So we've talked a little bit there about how the dentist can build that trust with a patient. Once they're in the chair, they can have those conversations. They can build that credibility and dependability with the patient. Let's kind of rewind a little bit in terms of that patient journey and look towards the front desk and how much potential work is lost because of the types of conversations that are happening, or even where those conversations are happening at the front desk when a new inquiry comes into a practice. How would you advise practices to increase their success rate of converting an inquiry into an actual patient from a front desk capacity?
Well, in my view, the ultimate way to do that is to take the telephone off the front desk.
Right.
I give the example, if I walk into a hotel to check in, and just as I get to the reception desk, the receptionist picks up the phone, I'm annoyed as a customer. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not blaming the receptionist because they've been trained to answer the phone within three rings, but I'm there live. So that's one thing. Second thing is, put yourself in the receptionist position. The patient is walking towards them and the phone rings. That receptionist is now in a dilemma. Mm-hmm. On the phone is a potential new patient who needs focus, but in front of me is an existing patient who also needs my focus. Mm-hmm. I don't care how good at multitasking you are, you can't do those things properly.
Yeah, yeah.
And if I'm going to have a really good conversation with a patient who's inquiring about our services or prices, I need to be able to concentrate. Mm-hmm. And it's well known in human communication, a gentleman called Morabian in the 50s and 60s did research that as humans, we need the voice, the words, and the visual to really communicate effectively. Well, on the phone, you've only got the voice and the words.
Yes.
So you need to be really good and be able to concentrate really hard. So to me, take the phone off the desk and put it in a room where that receptionist can really take the time to listen to the patient on the other end of the phone. Really important.
And what about the style of questions that people should be asking that potential patient on the phone?
All open questions about them. And open questions have in the sentence somewhere how, what, why, where, when, and who. Mm-hmm. If you want to remember it, there's a great poem by Rudyard Kipling called The Elephant's Child.
Right.
And it starts with, I keep six honest serving men, They taught me all I knew. They are how and what and why, where and when and who. So The Elephant's Child by Rudyard Kipling. Look right. it up. It's quite a long poem, but the opening bit is about those six serving men.
Yeah.
And they provide you all the information you need and show genuine interest in the other person. So.
Okay, so great tips there from a front desk capacity. Let's, I'm flitting around a little bit
That's
here,
right.
but let's kind of go to the other end of that of the conversation and imagine we've had the front desk conversation. We've got that patient through to have a first consultation with the dentist.
Yeah.
Who's built that rapport and that credibility with the patient, and then starts to think about the actual treatment plan.
Yeah.
How successful do you think dental practices are at the presentation of the actual treatment plan, and how could they improve that?
For very simple treatments, crowns, you know, the unexpected treatments, a filling, a crown replacement, that can happen between the dentist and the patient in what I refer to as the 90-second treatment plan.
Right.
So, Les, I've had a look in your mouth. Generally, everything's fine. However, there is a little issue with this tooth up here, but don't worry. We can fix it. However, I've got a number of options for you. What can I tell you first?
Right.
Now I've asked you a question.
Puts the patient in control.
Puts the patient in control. So that's a simple one. For the bigger treatments, if patient's looking for a smile makeover or perhaps implants or orthodontics, then I think you have to put more effort into presenting that treatment plan. So assuming you've collected all the information the receptionist got, either the dentist or another member of the team has gone through the personal dental assessment with the patient before they've had the clinical diagnosis, so you've got further information. You will then know what the patient values, how important the treatment is, what they want out of it. So then when you present the treatment back to them, you present the options and relate each of those to what the patient said before.
Right.
Now, I've suggested practices do it maybe with a little PowerPoint or keynote presentation. They can do it on paper or just simply sit down with the patient and go through it. Show them photographs of them now, but always relate what you're saying back to the patient. So take, for instance, when I had orthodontic treatment. When the orthodontist said, right, if we do this treatment, the gaps you said you don't like will close, and therefore, as you said to us, Simon, you believe you'll feel more confident talking to your customers, who happen to be dentists. And so we'll give you the result you want physically, but also we'll give you the emotional thing you were after. Well, I can't say no, can I?
You know.
All I can then think about is, am I willing to spend the money on it?
But how many dentists do you know, Simon, who won't take the time to actually kind of invest in that conversation and walking the patient through that treatment plan and will basically just print out a 20-page plan and put it in the post and see what happens?
Sadly, too many.
Yeah.
And it's a shame because they've obviously got a great relationship with the patient. They put a huge amount of hours into those treatment plans, and in fact my wife was a good example of that. She received a treatment plan from a great dentist in the post on Christmas Eve, and of the 28 pages, the only one she looked at was page 28 with the price on it, and actually burst into tears and said, I'm not worth that. So had that dentist called her and I in and sat down, and you don't need a presentation, but just gone through it and related it to what Christine wanted, actually we'd have gone ahead with the treatment with him.
Yeah.
So, and I worked with another practice a few years ago who, when I went through his outstanding treatment plans, it totaled £1 million.
Wow.
And I phoned three patients and said, can I ask you why you didn't go ahead? And one of the ladies said, well, actually, I'm a journalist, so I'm pretty good with language, and I didn't understand a word of that treatment plan.
Yeah.
So I have had the treatment done. I didn't pay any less for it, but the dentist explained it to me.
Wow.
In ordinary language.
What a lesson that is.
So that, yeah, to me, it's so important. Now, one other example I'll give you is years ago when I was in America, I worked with a dentist who had a very bad stammer and could not physically talk to patients. He's got an amazing practice because his staff do all the questioning and all the treatment presentation. He doesn't touch that. He just does the clinical stuff. So actually, it's not about your clinical knowledge or actually it being the dentist doing it. It's often better if it's another member of the team.
Yeah.
Because as a patient, I'm probably going to ask more questions of a nurse or a receptionist than I ever will of the clinician.
But that's also an instance, isn't it, of playing into your strengths.
Yeah.
If you have people within the practice who are natural communicators and are very good at striking rapport with people, we'll put them in that position where they're starting to have those conversations.
Yeah. Yeah. I know from my own perspective, I'm not shy, but if I go and see a GP, which isn't very often, I guarantee when I get home, my wife says, did you ask this? Did you ask that? And I said, no, no. Because I'm a bloke and I didn't want to look stupid in front of the clinician. That's my personal view.
Yeah.
Whereas if I was perhaps talking to the practice manager or the practice nurse, I might have opened up more. Mm-hmm. And it's just that, call it what you like, white coat syndrome or that slight fear of opening up to a clinician. Well, just let your patients have the opportunity to talk to somebody else about it.
Yeah. We haven't got much time left, Simon, and we need to wrap it up in a second. But I just want to ask you one final question on a subject that I know is very, very close to your heart, which is a massive enabler, I think, in terms of helping people increase their treatment uptake, and that's patient finance.
Yes.
So you were one of the founding directors of Medenta, probably the leading company in dentistry from a patient finance perspective. What would you say to practices about the power of patient finance?
It's about choice. Mm-hmm. So we've spent all this time now following the process properly from reception right through to presenting the treatment plan and relating it to the patient. And I said, if you've had a proper conversation with the patient about them, they've now sold the treatment to themselves. Mm-hmm. Yes, I want it. Now it's, can I afford it?
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, that's the treatment you want. Now, well, there's a number of ways you can pay for that. We take cash, of course. Mm-hmm. We'll happily take credit card. However, if you'd like to spread it over 10, 12, 18, 24 months, we can break it down into small chunks for you. Mm-hmm. What would be the best way for you? And again, the patient's in control, and you've made what they want affordable.
Yeah.
I don't know of many people these days that walk into a car show and buy a car for cash.
No.
We look at monthly payments. We certainly don't buy our houses for cash unless we win the lottery. So you budget and say, yes, I can afford that. Now, the other beauty of finance is you often spend more than you originally planned.
Mm.
Because if you were paying cash, you might have to go for the lower end treatment.
Yeah.
However, by financing, I can have what I really want because I'm going to spread the payments out. So it's about choice and it's about making what you're offering affordable. Simple as that.
Common sense.
Yeah.
Simon, it's been an absolute pleasure as normal. Lots of fantastic hints and tips there, and a little bit of Rudyard Kipling into the bargain. You know, what fantastic value. Thanks very much, Simon. That's been our podcast for today. We'll catch you again soon. Thank you.